Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on what time you're watching this podcast. This podcast series we call Race, Culture, and the Church. Race, Culture, and the Church. And I invite you to look at our body of work, between 50 to 60 episodes that began 1 week after the murder of George Floyd. So I invite you to enter into this conversation and into this space, the intersection of race, culture, and church. That's where we'd like to hit. Think of it as a Venn diagram, and in the center, that's where we want to be. But definitely two out of the three on the regular, we do hit that. And I am pleased. I am beyond overjoyed. I know I say that a lot, but I am beyond overjoyed to have into this space Scott Syphax. Scott, thank you for being here. You are someone that really needs no introduction. If you mention at least your last name, there may be a lot of Scotts around Sacramento, but if you mention Syphax, oh, you mean the one that's on the board? Oh, the one that's in charge of, oh, or the one that's on PBS? Yeah, that guy. Thank you for entering into this space.
Thank you for having me here today, Pastor. It's a pleasure and a new experience for me to be on this side of the microphone.
I was wondering, actually, it did cross my mind. It's like, I wonder how many times, if at all, Mr. Syphax had been on the other side of the microphone. So I'm assuming it's a rare thing that it's you're the one giving the interview, not the one being interviewed.
Typically in this era of my life, it's me doing the interviewing rather than being interviewed. It's a kind of a funny story. The way that journey started was I used to get interviewed a lot, and a lot of times by fairly hostile journalists. I've been toasted in national publications, on television, on radio. One day I had been misquoted, and I felt a news story was unfair that actually the Sacramento Bee had written on me, and I was so mad that I was talking with the general manager of the local PBS affiliate in Sacramento, and I said, I'm tired of all this negativity, and I'm tired of people being unfairly characterized by the press and all that, and that there ought to be a show that told the good stories about the good news of Sacramento and all the wonderful things that people are doing and the wonderful personalities that make up this region. We need to celebrate those conversations, the conversations that matter. And he said, that's a great idea. I've been thinking the same thing. Who should host that show? Who should do it? And I don't know why. I said, well, I should. And I had no training, no background, just a lot of anger and energy.
Well, it doesn't come across. Well, it's a different format. And I guess that started in 2011?
It did. And let's see, 13 years later and an Emmy Award to boot, we're still doing it. And it's very rewarding and gratifying, but I will tell you that the toughest thing is that I have to change out my pictures because I've been on television for so long. My wife, Celeste, will say, you don't look like that anymore.
So what pictures those are the ones that roll through that B-roll
Well, that they put in the advertisements.
Oh, I see.
And I wish I was that young still.
You look young. You look very young. But that is, I guess that's for a lot of Sacramentans, that's the extent of knowing Scott Syphax. He's the guy that's on Studio Sacramento Fridays, and he's got everybody in there from the politicians to the corporate leaders, to the average person that are advocating whatever. But there's so much more. Let me just call the roll a little bit. And again, as my crackerjack team of researchers, me, that actually scraped off this information. And I just wanted to call the roll on some of the awards. North America's Top 100 Corporate Directors for 2022. Mort Friedman Civic Leadership Award, 2020. Sacramento Magazine, The Power Influence 100, 2018. Robert Matsui, Community Service Award, 2017. Alumni of the Year, School of Business, Sac State, Stingers Up, 2017. Greater Sacramento Urban League's Community Empowerment Award, 2016. Ron Brown Business Visionary Award, California State Black Chamber of Commerce, 2015. Distinguished Alumni Award, Los Rios College, 2015. Distinguished Alumni Award, Community College League of California, 2014. Honorary Doctorate from Drexel, 2013. Financial Times Agenda Magazine, Compensation 100, 2013. Executive Leader of the Year. I could go on and on and on, Scott Syphax. Where does all this come from? What wellspring, what vein, what gold vein does this tap into?
I figured that if I could just win the right award, maybe my kids would actually do what I tell them to do.
Good luck.
It has not happened yet.
And as a married man, I'm sure you still have to take out the trash too. So
I did last night. Today was trash day.
So it keeps me grounded.
It keeps me grounded. Well, you know, it's funny. You talk about Studio Sacramento and, you know, PBS and all that stuff. But, you know, the OG Sacramentans would say, oh, that's Scotty Syphax from Freeport Elementary School in Meadowview, because that's where I come from. Or, oh, that's Scott Syphax, who used to manage the Tower Theater on Broadway. Oh, that's Scott Syphax, who he and his partner, Mark Freeman, you know, used to run the Vortex, and people like Dr. Dre and folks like that used to run through there. And those are the OG Sacramentans. The people who all they can refer to is PBS or the Nehemiah Corporation, all that. Those are recent arrival folks. So
is the Scotty Syphax different from the Scott Syphax?
No. Not at all. And that's why if I walk down Broadway, just a few steps from where we're at right now here at the church, or walk down Amherst over in Meadowview, I will still find people on the street who remember me back when. They'll be like, man, I saw you on TV. You ain't changed a bit.
So tell your wife, it's like, I still look the same.
That's right. And, you know, and for me, those people, whether they're in South Sacramento or in Oak Park or the Del Paso Heights or the Fabulous 40s or, you know, Land Park, Sacramento, these are my people.
But you were born in Detroit.
I was.
Okay, let me just ask real quick. Pistons or Kings?
Kings.
Okay, just checking. That was just a check.
Kings.
You said you went to Freeport Elementary.
Mm-hmm.
Graduated high school from?
John F. Kennedy, class of 81.
This one thing about Sacramento that I have found that it's, I don't know, it's, I guess Chicago would be wards or whatever. Mm-hmm. But in Sacramento, in order for folks to get a gauge on whoever they want to get a gauge on, what high school did you graduate from?
That's true. And that's just like, you know, like my wife Celeste, prettiest cheerleader ever to come out of Hiram Johnson. Okay. And what happens is that when she brings up Hiram Johnson, all of a sudden she's got new friends, you know? And it is funny. I'd never thought about it until you said that.
It's true about Sacramento.
It is.
We shared before we started recording that we are like one or two removed from everybody, knowing everybody. Everybody knows you. If you would have to be living under a shell or something, everyone knows you. You may not know everybody, but Sacramento is a very connected community.
Mm-hmm.
very connected. And within the communities, they're even more connected. So Oak Park, there are, as I've shared with folks, it is a very relational community. It almost, to use a word, it's almost like the mafia. It's like, oh, you become a made person with an introduction. Oh, this is Scott Syfax. He's a good friend of mine. You're in.
Well, that's true, because it's like here in Oak Park, people who know me, they know me as the nightclub guy from the Vortex or the concert promoter or Tower Theater, whatever. But the main way they know me is, oh, that's Donnie Poole's cousin who lived on Bigler Way and used to hang out with Doobie Brown, whose mama lived up against the park, McClatchy Park.
Yeah.
And so if I go over to Kevin Johnson's bookstore, his mom's bookstore, or to the coffee shop or something like that, I will run into somebody. And if they introduce me to somebody, that's how they're going to introduce
me.
Great. They don't care about any of the awards that you said. They don't even know about them. The important award for them is that, at least in Oak Park, that my cousin is Donnie Poole. So
sounds like somebody I need to know, and I can name drop maybe at some point. To pivot somewhat, is that you have born in Detroit, but you have Sacramento connections and roots. From South Sacramento, navigated space, sounds like, in not only Oak Park, but you said at the Vortex, and that was at
15th and C Street.
So downtown. So they're Alkali Flats even. Mm-hmm. So you know your way around Sacramento. Mm-hmm. I guess, again, Scotty and Scott are the same persons, but also how I came to know you, of you, is through Nehemiah Corporation.
Yeah.
And that's how, Nehemiah, unpack that for us.
Well, you know, Nehemiah Corporation had a huge impact on the Sacramento region. It was started by another preacher's kid named Don Harris, whose father was the pastor of Antioch Progressive Baptist Church. And Pastor Mitchell actually bankrolled the original corporation that became the Nehemiah Corporation. And I believe that the loan was for $4,000. And this turned into a multi-hundred-million-dollar national corporation, or actually conglomerate, with eight different corporations that did everything from community lending to urban ministries, where we would take young people of faith and plant them in churches across the country to do racial reconciliation work, to the claim to fame today is the Nehemiah Community Foundation, now called NELP Leadership Programs, is the home of the Nehemiah Emerging Leaders Program, which I would argue is the delta force of leadership development within this region.
Started all of that whole arc began with someone being willing to bankroll $4,000.
That's right, for a senior citizens project. And then the founder of Nehemiah, Don, got into housing, and the down payment assistance program that he and his colleagues created, and which I eventually took over, grew into the largest privately funded home ownership down payment assistance program that this country has ever seen. And the wonderful thing is, it started out of a Black Baptist church here in Oak Park, Sacramento, California.
What does that say about, what does that just say? Just period.
What it says is that we are capable of many amazing contributions to lifting up our own communities and building our own successes. And not that we won't take assistance from anywhere that is willing to offer it.
Sure.
But that that concept that we don't practice enough of reciprocity and working together and having faith not only in the Lord, but also in each other, is when we do that, magic can happen, because that $4,000 that turned into the down payment assistance program that became the largest down payment assistance program and started powering a social enterprise that generated hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue per year, the spinoff, the profits from that, did things like created a loan fund which provided the early lending for someone like my old friend from the skating rink, from Florin Fantasia skating rink, Kevin Johnson, to redevelop his neighborhood, his beloved neighborhood, Oak Park here, mm-hmm. with that Victorian project and then the 40 Acres project and the other projects that he's done. And, you know, Oak Park was a neighborhood that people drove past.
Correct.
Now it's a neighborhood that increasingly people want to stick around in.
Oh, it's a destination.
And so I give, and my colleagues give Kevin all the credit for that vision, that persistence, that that determination to show people what was possible. We played a small role in that. We believed in him and provided that capital because we believed in that vision too. And so the Nehemiah story is one where it is that when you control your own means of production, you can take a chance in faith with each other that sometimes the broader society is incapable or unwilling to do.
You're being very, very humble and very kind with your deference in this case to former Mayor Johnson. But I'm assuming that the Nehemiah name came from Nehemiah of the Bible.
Oh, yeah.
So if we're not reading about the rebuilding of the wall unless the king sponsored the rebuilding of the wall.
That's true.
You need to, what do you want to do? I need to rebuild the wall. Okay, you can go ahead and do that. Well, in this case, you were the king. Nehemiah Corporation allowed the vision to be fulfilled. Why is this? It is to be celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
But why does it seem to be so unique or uncommon? Why don't we see this more often?
There's probably a bunch of very complex reasons. For me, what I would say is that many times we don't have success leads far too many of us to want to escape where we came from rather than bring back and double down on the place that nurtured us in the first place. And I would say that one commonality that I share with former Mayor Johnson is that we've always wanted to come back home and reinvest in the places and the people that made us who we are. And that's something that we try to teach in the Emerging Leaders Program, is celebrate the people and places that made you uniquely you and come back to it. Come back to it. Because when we double down like that on those people and places, it's a force multiplier that inspires others to do the same. We really, while there's a lot of external support that we can wait around for, far too many times we have a lot of what we already need if we're willing to bring it to the table and give it selflessly.
And let me, gosh, I shouldn't.
Go ahead.
What we need, I suspect, is more than just money.
Oh, yeah. Well, we need God.
Okay.
All right. Oh, no, and I'm going to tell you the reason. Faith has always been important to me in my journey, but it becomes more important the older I become. Not just for me, because, you know, I am a reclamation project that the Lord is still working on.
Get in line behind me.
Okay. But it's a concern that I have, that I worry about how brightly the flame of faith burns in our community. Because
I think it's flickering?
More so than I'd like it to.
Okay.
If you want to, we can come back to that.
Do you walk where we need to go?
Faith gives you the strength to walk into places unseen and unproven, and where the conventional wisdom says not to go.
Reverend Syphax.
And I also think that faith informs us through Christ's example to be of our best nature in extending our gifts and our blessings beyond ourselves to those who, like Christ's example, may need a fish today, but ultimately we want to learn to teach how to fish for themselves for a more permanent and sustainable future. And that was what turned me on about coming to work for Nehemiah in the first place and leading the corporation, was because I've always had a heart for helping people who needed help. But I got very impatient with people very quickly because I wanted them ultimately to be able to help themselves and not need me anymore. And so the whole theory of the Nehemiah Corporation was to be compassionately impatient, which was we would have compassion for the need that we were attempting to address immediately through home ownership and other community building activities. But ultimately, we wanted people to be independent, sort of powerhouses of their own destiny. Mm-hmm. And people would always say, well, what is it you want in return? What we want in return is for them to step into and live with confidently their dreams, but to pay it forward based on our example in helping somebody that we would never know to touch.
See, that is so atypical or so uncommon in, it was uncommon then, it's uncommon now, because, oh, there's gotta be a catch. You must want something on the back end. But to say, oh, pay it forward, be a better lived out human, that's it.
That's it. And the thing is that so many people have followed that example. And it's funny because people rise to the level more times than not of the faith and confidence you have in them. Hmm. Sometimes you could take somebody who is a bad character, but because of the fact that in your interaction with them, you are treating them in a way with dignity and respect that, frankly, they may not have earned yet, but whether it's through inspiration or shame, they will act better, at least momentarily,
right. Correct.
than they might be usually inclined
right.
to do.
Right. You know, it's looking past the obvious and into what you're capable of doing. Mm-hmm. But there is that element of, as I've shared with others, that it's wonderful that I have confidence in you, but you need to have confidence in yourself. You need to know that you're able to do the things that we're talking about right now.
Well, you do. And that actually informs part of the reason that I did start the Emerging Leaders Program. And the reason is that a lot of times we don't have the confidence that that we should have in ourselves, or sometimes the world beats it out of us. You know, you have a young person, and this happens a lot with people who come from traditionally disenfranchised communities. They may be the pride and joy of their family, the smart one, the gifted one, the you know, talented one. And they go out into the world, and they get the mess beaten out of them. And sometimes it's because of the fact that they were unprepared, but as many times it's because the world may not necessarily be set up to embrace them.
Correct.
They have a harder road to go. They're carrying a 100-pound back that others don't.
Correct.
And they come back, and they're a bit beaten up, and they come back home, and there's the family cookout or the family gathering, and everybody is like on pins and needles because they want to hear the story about their conquering hero's success. And they find out, and so the conquering hero, who's been beat up by the world and it hasn't gone well, doesn't want to show up. And they start to feel like a fraud and an imposter. And then the worst thing that happens is they say, maybe I'm not special after all. Hmm. Maybe it was all a lie. Maybe all my family and my friends and my neighborhood, they were all wrong about me in the first place. And they start to slide sideways, and their unique contribution to the world never gets realized, because it's not because they didn't have that potential inside them to ripen and flower, but it's because they lost confidence in themselves. And so it just never, ever surfaced again. So we created this Emerging Leaders Program because we take these young, usually young people, and we wrap arms of love around them and remind them, yes, you are special. Yes, you are beautiful. Yes, you are worthy. And we believe in you so much that we're going to step with you every step of the way, and we're going to walk with you all the way to that North Star that guides you. And when you get there, we're not going to take credit for it, but we are going to stand back and applaud and bask in the light that you shine on all of us.
That is awesome. So how many emerging leaders have graduated your program?
Way north of 250 now. I can't keep count.
Wow. And you have a current cohort now?
Class 15. We celebrated our 15th anniversary last Thursday night at Sac State.
How many are Tuesday in each? How many are in each cohort? Roughly.
Sometimes 20, 15? Sometimes 12, sometimes 20. It depends. We work with the best and brightest, and depending on the year, it's like a fine vintage of wine, okay? Sometimes you might get 1,000 cases out of that vineyard, and sometimes you might get 800.
So I was going to say, sometimes the grapes are good, sometimes the grapes are maybe not
so. Are better.
Okay. Touché. And I'm sure my wonderful podcaster, Drew Escobar, will have a lower third information bar to get in touch to find out about the Emerging Leaders program.
www.nelpleaders.org.
Okay. So you said there was typically it skews younger. Define younger.
Well, younger used to be 21 to 35, but we've had a couple people that are, let's just say they are AARP qualified.
Okay, so you're getting close to my demographic. Yeah, okay, yeah. I'm a senior AARP.
yeah, so
So 20-ish to 30-ish.
20-ish to, we'll say 30-ish, maybe a little bit of 40-ish.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I am confident that folks will at least sniff and scratch and point and click and try and seek additional information on the Emerging Leaders Program. I know I'm over budget in terms of time, but from your vantage point,
yeah.
You know, we're obviously, I say obviously at the time of this recording, we're about a week from electing a new mayor in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. But beyond the, it's all related, but beyond the politics, if you will, the state of Sacramento, if you were to give a, it'd be tough to say just a one word assessment of Sacramento. Give me your take on the city in terms of, you've got issues of folks getting back to work for the state, the downtown development, the homeless situation. Just give me a 60 second on
Sacramento's struggling right now. And it's struggling because we're in the midst of multiple changes, any one of which would soak up 100% of the attention of the leadership of this region if it was just by itself. But we've got a changing of the guard demographically in terms of what leadership looks like. The baby boom generation is holding on by its fingernails. Mm-hmm. And so there is a jostling of trying to, the younger generations, millennials, the Gen Xers, the Gen Zers,
trying to find
their place.
It's my turn.
Yeah, it's my turn. So we've got a generational change that brings with it changes in priorities, changes of attitudes. We've got economic dislocations. We've had historic dislocations where it is that the citizenry of Sacramento, particularly in its Black and Latino and some AAPI and some Caucasian parts of the community, are not prepared for the jobs that are needed in the workforce today. And we have local school systems that frankly don't perform. They may be entities with $1 billion, you know, or close to $1 billion in budget every year, but their product is more like a mom and pop store in terms of what they turn out quality and quantity wise. And so we've got a dislocation that has to be fought on. We've got a huge issue related to not only homelessness, but also homeownership opportunities. We're going to see, if things don't change, an exodus by our young people from this region because they're not going to be able to stay in this region because of the fact that they can't afford to do the things that come with claiming their own version of the good life. Mm-hmm. Home ownership, a permanent place in community, the chance to start to put together a savings. People don't want to survive. They want to design a life.
They want to thrive.
They want to thrive. And so I could go on from there, but there's a multiplicity of issues. And we have to get a more engaged citizenry by creating opportunities where people can have a voice, be part of processes to try and use their voices to explore and solve those problems, and a leadership that makes a commitment and demonstrates consistently that not only do they invite those voices to be heard, but promise to actually act and commit to implementing the discoveries and solutions that those voices come up with. And it can't be, we want to hear your voice until we go into a closed room for the decisions to be made. And then the few and the privileged make the decisions for the rest of us. And that's historically, regardless of party affiliation, the way that it works.
Correct.
Power.
Correct.
Is power. Power is not Democrat or Republican. I would say a pox on both of their houses. And I know that that's not popular here in Sacramento, but I learned a lesson when I worked in the legislature. My old boss, Senator Robert Presley, said, "You watch these fools down here on the Senate floor." He says, "When we're down on the floor and they say, close the doors and bring in the absent members, and the television cameras go off, you can't tell a dime's worth of difference among any of us, because we all end up acting just the same way. The politics is show business for the people back home to motivate them to vote in our direction. But it's not as often as it should be about a real clash about implementing meaningful solutions to solve the people's problems."
Well, Scott Syphax, on that cheery note.
Sorry. But let me say this. We have the requisite potential, the talent, and the ability to solve the challenges that face this city, this region, and this state. The real question is not only do we have the will to do it, but how are you and I personally going to step up and model the behavior it takes to be engaged, involved, and committed to finding and implementing those solutions?
See, that's going to require all of us to step out of our comfort and convenience and to intentionally engage, dare I say, the fight. To engage in the process in a robust, substantive way, as I've shared in here at City Church, when it comes to ministry and ministering, is that it is a full-bodied experience, and there are ebbs and flows. It excites, it disappoints, but you cannot think for a minute it's going to be a straight line or easy. But straight line and is easy is what tends to get sold. Well, if you just do this, then this will be the result.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. So while most people know me because of PBS and KVIE and all of the other community endeavors that I have, my wife Celeste and I run a strategic planning and executive coach advisory company, Syphax Strategic Solutions. And so we teach people board governance, teach boards of corporations and nonprofits board governance. We coach CEOs, and we do a lot of strategic planning for companies, trade associations, things like that. And the commonality is that coming up with the plan many times is the easy part. Coming up with the plan, what is tough is the execution, because execution requires commitment and consistency.
Correct.
And accountability.
Correct.
And metrics. And the best strategic plans and the best leaders are those who are willing to submit themselves to those factors and to be transparent and to publish and broadcast not only what the criteria for success is, but what are the milestones along the way and what is their accountability for producing those milestones. And what happens is that we don't run our politics and our communities the way that we say that we run our businesses. Mm-hmm. We actually have kind of a separate and unequal system. And so the accountability, other than voting somebody out of office, for how we transform and improve our region and the quality of lives for the people who live in this region, is broken. And what frustrates me is that none of what I've just said in the last 2 minutes is rocket science, but our leadership, particularly our electeds, ignore the basic precepts of management and accountability that, frankly, they probably demand from the people that work underneath them.
Correct.
And that's something, if there was one thing that I hope that the people who are listening to this conversation might think about, is how can they be a part of trying to shed heat and light on a greater level of commitment and accountability on those who claim the mantle of leadership, but ultimately, when results time comes, is what, me?
Correct.
It was that other fellow. Correct. Or that other lady.
Correct. Correct.
But not me.
I'll conclude with this. What I hear you say is that old adage, or at least the adage came to my mind, to be the change you want to see.
Yes.
And that is, it's easier to say, do as I say, not as I do, because the incentives are built in such a way that I benefit and I am rewarded for a certain set of actions, as opposed to I'm in it for the long haul for change that I may not live to see, but I know it's the right thing to do.
And, you know, giving selflessly and understanding that you may not, as Dr. King said, he might not be there with us.
Correct.
But the promised land is out there.
Correct.
It still is. And we may not get there with everybody else, but the fact of the matter is that we owe it not just to ourselves, but to our families, our community, and our humanity.
Correct.
To play a role in that procession of life to a better place.
Scott Syphax, it has been an honor, an absolute honor to have you here. I'm not going to even ask, will you come back? You have to come back.
I would be honored myself.
You have to come back. Thank you so much for entering into this space, and I look forward to speaking to you again very soon about the state of Sacramento.
All right. Let's
thank
do
you.
It.
Thank you.